Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 12, the holiday edition of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Yeltaka. Thanks for listening in. You may recognize Iron Maiden's The Trooper that's playing right now. That is going out as a special tribute to our friend and CCFR member, Richard Bone. So that's for you, Richard. In this episode, we're going to reveal the name of the CCFR's new show on Wild TV. Kind of cool. And the person who came up with it, they have not been notified. So we're going to see exactly who that was. We'll also have a very interesting interview with CCFR member Tyler Johnstone and the situation or legal action that he launched against the Vancouver City Police Department. Very interesting. We'll also talk a little bit about how to get some answers to your legal questions and or how to work with the Canadian Firearms Program. All that and possibly a little bit more right after this.
It's a fact that licensed gun owners do not represent a disproportionate risk to public safety. Yet whether it's backdoor gun registries, complex regulations, or unreasonable penalties for paperwork offenses, Canada's anti-gun bureaucrats will never stop trying to eliminate your will or ability to own and use firearms. Take action, take a stand, and join the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights by visiting us at www.firearmrights.ca.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's time to just dive headlong into some good news. The name of the CCFR's television show to air on Wild TV in July 2018 is as follows. The CCFR's Downrange Canada. So there it is. The CCFR's Downrange Canada actually makes a really nice acronym, too, DRC. Really easy to say. And I will also share with you who came up with that name. If you remember, we had a working title. It didn't really work for the show. We decided to come up with something else. I couldn't think of anything. The other producers of the show, we were kicking around a few things, just weren't sure if we had the right idea. I went to our Facebook group. I said, hey, you know, if anybody has an idea of what a great show name would be, send it to us in an email. If you are the one that we choose, then your name will appear as the show name creator in the credits of the show, at least here in the first season. So that individual has been chosen, and his name is Stacy Cartmell. Congratulations, Stacy. Stacy's actually an FO here for the CCFR, not only just a member, but congratulations to Stacy. Your name's going to be in the show credits for coming up with Downrange Canada. Now, there were a couple of similar names, but they came in after Stacy's. He was the first one to beat everybody to the punch. So if you came up with a very similar name, I know I saw Downrange for sure. In another email, but if you came up with that one, sorry, it's got to be a little quicker on the draw next time we have a TV show, I guess, right? Which I don't know if that would be ever, but at least we're in it this time. A little bit of inside baseball for you guys. Just in case you're not sure exactly what this show is, we're going to be traveling across Canada. And when I say across Canada, I'm really probably talking about four or five locations. This season is going to be 13 episodes. So it's not quite a half a season kind of thing. Other seasons can be 20 to 26 episodes, depending on the show itself, right? But anyway, this is going to be a 13 season episode. And I would say we're traveling across Canada to highlight all the shooting sports that we can get content on, that people participate in, and talk to the people who engage in those sports. So the idea is we're bringing black rifles and handguns, right? Because this show is all about sport shooting. There's lots of hunting shows out there, but there's never been one about sport shooting that is all Canadian content. So the idea is we're bringing black rifle and handgun sports to the mainstream, like on TV, and it's Canada. So I don't think it can be overstated how important this is for gun owners, because we've been always hiding. We've been always ashamed of a sport, obviously not between us, but you know, we've always been picked on and beaten on and stereotyped by the media and even by government and by other Canadians because they just never see us. And when they see us, we're associated with some criminal activity, some gang member shooting up a mall in downtown Toronto, right? So this is going to go a long, long way to normalizing what we do, which is normal and safe and completely appropriate, both morally and legally, right? So anyway, I'm really excited that we have this opportunity, you know, just as an individual gun owner. So anyway, so that's the show. We're going to go across Canada, stop as many places as we can, or as our budget provides. And the more our travel budget is, the more content, right, that we can produce. But at least for this season, we have a very set budget. So we're trying to, I would say we're going to get to maybe 4 or 5 different places in Canada to cover whatever shooting sports are happening there within a, I'd say a 4-day period, let's say 4 or 5 day period. So last night I spent about 6 hours on CCFR stuff, and I've started to create a production calendar. So basically what this task is, it's ridiculous, just so you guys know kind of how we're approaching this. Basically, I've got one central calendar, you know, in Excel, and it's an Excel spreadsheet in the shape of a calendar, basically. And I have to research every shooting sport in every city in Canada and come up with event dates for every one of them so that I can look at the calendar and I can say what's happening in, you know, Vancouver or the Lower Mainland for this span of 4 days, you know, in the spring. Can I get, you know, 4 or 5 different events in there that we can film and try to cover? All right. So if I look at, you know, what's going on in Toronto for this 4 days, what's going on in Calgary, what's going on in Winnipeg. So we're trying to bring everything we can into a central calendar so we can schedule these filming days and cover as much as we can, because that's what we're trying to do, right? Get as many sports and as many people involved as possible. And so that we can humanize ourselves and show people, you know, what there is to be offered in shooting sports. There's so much out there. So that's the idea. So it's going to be a huge challenge, but anyway, that's some of the inside baseball and what's going on with the show at this point. So it's a pre-production phase as we speak. So that is the CCFR Downrange Canada update. So what I'm going to do is have a quick break. I'm going to come back and we're going to have an interview with Tyler Johnstone. And just so you know, Tyler Johnstone had an interaction not to be characterized as positive with the Vancouver City Police Department, but there were some really interesting lessons that were learned, and it was a very interesting process. So I think you're going to really love this. Stay tuned and we'll be right back with that interview.
There are politicians and bureaucrats in Canada who believe honest, hardworking Canadians cannot be trusted with firearms. These people will stop at nothing to make sure they are the only ones who can possess them. Let them know you don't consent to their ongoing campaign against you. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, now and for generations to come. Donate or become a member of the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights by visiting us at www.firearmrights.ca. And now, a CCFR exclusive interview.
Hey everybody, we're back. I've got Tyler Johnstone on the, on Skype, not on the phone, and he's going to tell us a bit of a story. How's it going, Tyler?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Excellent. Thanks for being here. So can you give us an overview of what happened to you, and then we can kind of, like, just an overview, and then we'll get into kind of the details after that.
Yeah, you bet. So about a year and a half ago, I was pulled over driving my Jeep here in Vancouver. I was pulled over for having a bent front license plate. I know how absurd that sounds, but it is what it is. So the officer asked me if I could hop out and straighten the license plate. So, of course, I did so. And so he at that point asked if he could check my license and registration. So I gave him those documents. But as anybody in BC would be familiar, I had just had my license renewed, so I had the paper interim driver's license. So when I provided that to the officer, he asked if I had any other government-issued photo ID. So I did, of course, but the only other government-issued photo ID that I had was my PAL. So when I presented him with my PAL, he started, he first actually asked if I had any firearms or ammunition in the vehicle. I told him that I did in fact have a couple of boxes of shotgun shells in the vehicle, but that I didn't have any firearms with me at that point. So he started making some accusations, such as that the ammunition needed to be locked up and that I needed a permit to transport the ammunition. So after a few of these accusations, I kind of just calmly told him that I wasn't overly interested in answering any more questions about my lawful possession of firearms or ammunition. So the officer took my documents and went and ran them in his computer, and everything checked out okay. So he returned back to my vehicle and asked me to step out of it, which of course I complied with, and went to the back of my Jeep. And his partner came up and instructed me that they would conduct a search of my vehicle. So at that point, I asked if I was under arrest, and I was told that I wasn't. So I told the officers that I didn't consent to a search at that point, and in fact would not consent to a search of my vehicle. So I was told that the search would happen whether I liked it or not, and that it was under the guise of officer safety. Being a little bit frustrated at this point, I told the officers that I didn't really care what it was in the name of, but that I didn't consent to a search of my vehicle. So they, of course, told me that they were going to search it whether I liked it or not, and obviously I wasn't going to physically stop the officers from doing so. So I reiterated again that I didn't consent to that search, and I asked for a supervisor to attend the scene. So they searched my Jeep, and of course they didn't find anything other than the shotgun shells that were in there that I told them about. So the supervisor showed up on the scene and asked what seemed to be the problem, and I, of course, told him that his officers, I felt, had unlawfully searched my vehicle. He then told me that based on what the two officers had told him, that I was being detained for careless storage of ammunition, and he proceeded to walk down the street and make a phone call, and returned about 20 minutes later to tell me that he had just got off the phone with the range officer for the RCMP and that I hadn't done anything wrong. So at that point, I was free to go.
Well, there's, you know, some interesting parts of this is, number one, you knew and know far more than the average person, you know, as far as what your rights are and how to work with police and work within that framework, because most people don't know at all anything about handling police and what their rights are and what the police can and cannot do. So that's kind of interesting. So who was the officer, as far as you're aware, who were they on the phone with?
I was told that the supervisor contacted the range officer for the RCMP.
Were they on the range shooting a couple rounds or?
Couldn't tell you.
Okay. The range officer.
Yeah.
But, and then now what ensued after this? Obviously you didn't like the way that you're treated. You thought you were unfairly treated. And what was your recourse?
So, I actually met with my MLA, and my MLA was very knowledgeable on the subject. In fact, before he became my MLA, he was a civil rights lawyer. So he, of course, told me what I had already known, that, you know, the search was unlawful as well as the detention. You know, as I said to the officers when they had detained me, that, you know, I wasn't going to argue that they could detain me while they investigated whether or not I had committed a crime, of course, but that they couldn't detain me while they investigated whether or not something was illegal. And of course, that it was their job to know the law. And if they were incompetent in their job, that wouldn't be legal grounds to detain me. So my MLA essentially told me that the best course of action in his mind was for me to sue the Vancouver Police Department over the charter infractions for the unlawful search and seizure and the unlawful detention.
Okay. Now, didn't someone, whether it was a supervisor or not, they tried to show you what the law was on the side of the road, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So when the supervisor first showed up and told me, essentially, he first showed up and asked me what the issue was. And when I told him that, you know, I felt that the officers had unlawfully searched my vehicle, he said to me, yeah, it's my understanding that there's some ammunition in there. And I said to him, yeah, that's correct. And I'm legally authorized to possess it. In fact, one of your officers is still holding my valid firearms license. And so he said to me, yeah, I wasn't sure about the laws on that. So I looked them up on the way over, and he showed me his phone where he had looked them up. And so I promptly told the officer that the website that he was looking at was Wikipedia, and that I didn't think that that was a valid legal resource. I know it sounds hilarious, because it is. I wouldn't be able to make that up if I tried.
So now, how it was resolved is you decided to move forward with some legal action against them.
That's correct. Yeah. So I sued the Vancouver Police Department and the City of Vancouver and the officers individually. So the Police Act in BC says that essentially, if an officer makes a mistake during the course of duty, that they're not liable for that, which in a lot of ways I agree with. But the Police Act also says that if the officers are willfully negligent in making that error, that they're no longer covered under the Police Act. So I named the officers individually because I had no problem going in front of a judge and explaining to the judge why they were all willfully negligent in making that decision.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting, and the reason why, you know, in a situation like this where, you know, someone sues the police and they've had a negative interaction with law enforcement, and now I'm saying, yeah, come and use the CCFR platform for this, you know, someone would be forgiven if they thought, okay, well, this is an opportunity to smear the police. And actually, it's really not. And we're getting to the cool part of the story, which is how you proceeded against them and what you were trying to achieve. And basically, I'll preface it by saying, when, you know, the police, like policing is the same as any other workplace. You have a small group of people that are the overachievers that know everything. You have the vast majority that probably do a good job every day to varying degrees. And then you have a small group of people at the bottom that are incompetent and shouldn't be there and have no business being there. So whether you work in a lumber mill, or you work in a barber shop, or you work in you work in policing, it's the same. You'll always have this cross section of people that come in and out of the trade. And the problem with policing is, it's not like if you work in a lumber mill, it's like, now we've got to reject all this lumber.
Right.
No, you got people with handcuffs, on them or a gun pointed at them. And this is the problem. So efforts, what you're going to hear from Tyler and his efforts and the way that he went about it, is a huge benefit to both the policing in general, and the Vancouver City Police, and to law-abiding gun owners or law-abiding people in general. So tell us what you went after them for and what happened.
Well, I'll tell you that one of the things that happened that I don't think that we had previously discussed is, when all of this first happened, the VPD asked me what I wanted out of this. And, what'll come to light here very shortly is that, you know, monetary gain wasn't my motivation for doing this.
So they knew they screwed up.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. In fact, you know, back to what you were saying about, you know, rejecting the load of lumber, they mentioned to me at one point that the officers having to deal with this, you know, was a very stressful situation. And I said to them, you know, that may be the case, but what's far more stressful is, being arrested for something that's not illegal and having to spend, you know, $10,000 of your own money to defend that in court. And, you know, thankfully it didn't go that way for me, but, there's, for every story like mine, there's, you know, 100 stories that go the other way. So the VPD had asked me what I wanted out of this, and I told them that I had two fairly simple requests. One of them was that I had asked for an apology from the three officers involved. And the other thing is, as I'm sure you, of course, know, Rod, and a lot of the people listening to this probably know, the RCMP has on their website a very easy-to-read, printable one-page infographic showing the transportation and storage requirements for firearms. So I asked the VPD, in addition to an apology from the officers involved, I asked for them to request to the RCMP for them to add the ammunition requirements, or lack thereof, to that infographic. so that when this situation came up again, us as firearms owners could have that infographic both for our own reference, but also possibly to present to the officers who may not know the law that well, because the reality is that, you know, every officer can't know every law. I mean, you know, lawyers specialize in law for the same reason. It's absurd to know them all. But, you know, so that we could all use that as a resource. So the VPD, of course, refused to have the officers formally apologize, and also refused to ask the RCMP to add that information to the infographic. They said that they weren't in a position to change the law, which I, of course, said that I wasn't asking for a change in the law. I was just asking for the current law to be added to the infographic, and they refused to do that. So that's where I decided to proceed with the lawsuit. So one of the reasons that the lawsuit was dragged on for as long as it was is that in wanting this right from the beginning to be a learning experience for everybody involved, I flat out refused to sign a non-disclosure agreement with the VPD over it.
Which is what they wanted. They wanted you to sign an NDA.
Absolutely. In fact, every step of negotiation with the VPD, you know, both through court settlement conferences and our negotiation outside of the courts, every single step involved them requiring me to sign a non-disclosure. And I told them that I, you know, wouldn't sign a non-disclosure, and if we couldn't come to settlement terms without a non-disclosure, that I was happy to simply take it to court where, you know, of course, these things become public record.
So your intent was to get an apology, which you were warranted, and to have a clarification sent to officers so they wouldn't do this to anyone else in error. And that instead, that was totally rejected. And on top of that, if you wanted to talk to them further, they would require you to be legally bound not to discuss the outcome of any of this stuff.
That's essentially correct. Yeah. So the one thing that the VPD offered in the beginning when I made those two requests is that they would send out an info bulletin telling the officers that in their free time, they should have a look at the Firearms Act, which, of course, was not quite enough of a solid solution for me.
No. Now, if they hadn't made a mistake or if they hadn't, I don't know, degraded the image and the integrity of the police force previous to this, in my opinion, this is where I would jump on them. And I'd say, you know, all you guys had to do was apologize for making a clear error, and all you were being asked for, the city wasn't going to lose any money. All you were being asked for was to just make sure it didn't happen again. And that was a bridge too far for them. And I think that's really their indictment. That's horrible. That's just bad behavior for anybody, much less police, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that the whole basis for their refusal there was that they, didn't want to be held accountable and didn't want to accept any sort of guilt for making the mistake, which, you know, in the end, kind of still happened, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, I wanted to make this an educational thing from the very beginning, and I gave them what I thought was, you know, a really easy out in all of this, and they chose to not take it. So I chose to escalate it at that point.
Yeah, my real problem, I work with police quite often, right? And I've done a lot of work with police, and I have a lot of friends that are police, some real long time RCMP members and municipal police members. And it just, you know, when you know good police, it does frustrate you, because like the management and maybe the police that you dealt with, they're hurting my friends. They're pulling my friends into ill repute, right? So that's kind of the frustration there. So how did it end?
So, of course, we didn't sign a non-disclosure, which is why you and I are having this conversation. And the VPD agreed to pay me $3,500.
Well, it could you were going to make it a lot easier for him, right?
It could have been a lot less expensive and you know, a lot easier and dealt with a lot sooner. But here's where we ended up. I mean, the unfortunate thing is, of course, you know, the Vancouver Police Department and City of Vancouver had to, you know, pay lawyers to attend court, you know, for all of this and deal with all of this. So it really ended up costing the taxpayers, you know, in obviously undisclosed amount of money, you know, based on the incompetence of a, you know, a couple officers on the day when it happened. And then, you know, again, I guess the incompetence of the VPD in, you know, wanting to take responsibility and own up for it in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. Could have been a lot easier. So a couple of things. Number one, I think this has been valuable for anybody listening to it because they've gotten kind of a play by play on your, you know, your rights and the interaction that people have with police, meaning that you do not have to consent to a search. You certainly don't want to physically resist if they're going to do it illegally. You know, they have to give you a reason why they're pulling you over. They have to detain you for some reason. They have to have some probable cause to believe you committed an offense and all that, all the rest of that. So, and there is recourse. So that's all good. But now, didn't your MLA, he was a civil defense lawyer. He was had something to do with the BC Civil Liberties Union, right?
Yeah, he was the head of the BC Civil Liberties Association, actually, when he was a civil rights lawyer.
Now, didn't he write a little bit of material on your rights in interacting with police?
He did, funny enough. He wrote two books. One of them is Your Powers Under Arrest in British Columbia, and the other is entitled How to Sue the Police in British Columbia, which, of course, were both great resources in helping me to deal with this. I will say that, you know, I'm obviously not a lawyer. It is a little bit of a not necessarily a difficult, but a complicated process. But as I've, you know, shown, the resources are out there if you're willing to go find them.
Hmm. Well, I think that's probably a good thing to read. Now, did you not tell me, I can't remember if those books are online that you can just download them or something?
They are, yeah. They're both available online for free from the BC Civil Liberties Association website.
Perfect. Well, I think what I'll do is try to put some links in the show notes and see if we can't link to those so people can read them. So anyway, well, hopefully the VPD learned something from this and they can provide a higher level of service, which would be great for police and great for citizens. So that would be good.
Absolutely.
The real question, Tyler, is did you buy guns with the $3,500?
I may buy guns with the $3,500 just potentially out of spite and 50% out of spite and 50% for my habit of buying guns.
Yeah, just to soothe the addiction. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's awesome. Well,
the irony, if nothing else.
For sure, yeah. Well, I really appreciate you sharing this story and you know, if people out there are thinking, well, this is an anti-police story, don't bother. Don't bother commenting. Don't bother sending me a message. We're trying to get the system to do what it was originally intended to do. And that's this is all from a place of goodness. So I appreciate you sharing your story, Tyler. And, you know, you're okay with being plastered across the podcast here, hey?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Awesome.
Like I said, I mean, the intent of this from the beginning was to make it educational and, you know, hopefully let the members and the audience know that, you know, there is accountability and there is recourse. And, you know, with a little bit of legwork, you know, they can defend themselves in these kind of situations.
That's good to know. So I do know that you are a CCFR member. So thank you for your support. And I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. Thanks again, Ron.
The media constantly make a connection between licensed gun owners and criminal use of firearms. Whether it's intentional or not, the effect is the same. The average non-gun-owning Canadian agrees with our country's ineffective and prejudicial regulations. There is one organization in Canada that focuses on taking back public opinion, and that's the Canadian Coalition for Firearm Rights. Stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms. Donate now or become a member at www.firearmrights.ca.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Special thanks to Tyler for the interview. I thought it was really great. I thought the outcome for Tyler was very positive. I thought the outcome, although the, you know, Vancouver City Police or management there or the officers involved probably didn't think it was a positive outcome. I think it actually was, and maybe they just didn't know it. The relationship, and this is just my opinion, the relationship between law enforcement and civilians is it's a relationship that needs to be taken very, very seriously. And it's a really, really important relationship because it's pivotal. It's a foundational element of the entire social contract. It's a foundational element of our society. So I take that relationship extremely seriously, and I've had to do a lot of extra work on my own behalf to make sure I think what I'm trying to say is meeting people beyond halfway to make sure that relationship is the best that it can be. And that's exactly what Tyler did in this situation. So that was a lot of extra work and stress for Tyler to not just walk away and go, you know, damn cops, you know, Vancouver City Police suck. You know, maybe that's what somebody else would have done. And they would have just said, you know, it's the worst police force in Canada. And they would have walked away and they would have carried that opinion with them forever. And they would have spread that opinion to other people. But instead, he stayed the course and he went through this whole process. And it takes a lot of guts and a lot of discipline. So this is one of the reasons why I have a lot of respect for Tyler. And he did it the right way. He said, you know what? I'm not even after money, you guys. I just want you to improve the level of education of your officers so they don't wreck this very, very serious relationship that they have with the public, right? They don't wreck this very tenuous, very fragile, and very important balance that we have in our society between law enforcement and your average person on the street. And so I hope that the VPD learned something. I hope management learned something. You know, I when I hear a case like this, I always be like, yeah, I'd like to talk to management myself and ask them if, just for my own reference, like, do you understand how important it is that you follow the law yourself and that your behavior is not only just as good as, you know, the average good person on the street, but it has to be better. Because it's important. Not that I'm trying to get something over on you, but it's important for our actual society. So anyway, great job to Tyler. I would have done the same thing, and he did it right, which is to stay calm, always look at, you know, at things from an altruistic perspective, trying to make things better, and it ended up going his way. So anyway, the only last thing I'm going to draw to your attention is in the show notes or in the post here on Facebook or in YouTube in the description box. Just know that the links for those books written by his MLA are in there, and that's probably some good reading material, I think, for everybody. Anyway, having said that, let's move on to the other thing. So we've got a little segment I want to do real quick on how to get answers to your legal questions. And this is really important. I get people asking me legal questions all the time. I don't want to get too far off topic, but it's funny. People they'll Facebook message me questions about the law. They'll email me quite like, I'm not the firearm center, right? You know, I get like, I think I've said it before, I get like 40 to 60 messages a day from people. And it's not that I don't want to answer them. It's just, I would spend my whole day answering them, right? And I got to work at some point. Just hopefully if I don't get back to you on social media or whatever, don't take offense. It's just, I just can't possibly do it. And I actually have to spend some time with my family at some point. Now, the CCFR has legal advice for $16 a year. I want to make sure that everybody understands what that actually is. When it comes to services like legal advice, it's legal advice, not firearm legal advice, right? It's not specific to that. You can call the legal advice line about questions about trespass or liability or defamation or anything like that, right? So they're not specifically experts in firearm stuff. And the thing about these types of lines is you have to tell them exactly what you expect. You have to have a very defined question. And I know it's not always easy to do that. So I'm going to tell you or illustrate to you the process that you should go through if you have kind of an exotic question about storage, display, transportation, or handling, or transfer of firearms, or any of that kind of stuff. This is the process that you should follow. At least it's just my opinion. I'm going to make the same disclaimer as always. I'm not a lawyer, right? I am an instructor, but I'm not a lawyer. So it's not legal advice. So if you have to do your own due diligence, and I'm going to tell you right now how to do it. Okay. Now, first thing we need to do is understand how the system works. So you have legislation, and the Firearms Act is, I've described it as some of the worst legislation ever written by the human hand. And it really is. It's just absolute trash. And the people that wrote it, I don't know what they're doing, what they were thinking. They were all over the place. And to really understand how bad it really is, you really got to get into the legislation and look at it, right? And the parts of the criminal code associated with it are really poorly written. And the regulation is no exception. The regulation itself is really poorly written. And that's why you get all this bad stuff. Now, how the system actually works is you have the law. That's what we're going to use as a catch-all phrase. And then you have the Canadian Firearms Program. Well, the Canadian Firearms Program looks at the law. They say, okay, well, what does this law really mean? They interpret it, right? They interpret it to mean, what does this really mean for the firearm owner on the street? And how do we transpose these concepts to physical stuff? Like, okay, you know, to store a firearm, if it meets a law, obviously the firearm has to be unloaded, secure locking device on the firearm, out of sight, so onto the bed or something. They have to figure out how that works. So they do that. They develop kind of a set of their opinions. Remember, these are opinions only. And then they say to the RCMP, we're going to provide these support services to you. So should you pull someone over, this is what we interpret the law to be. So you can determine whether someone is in compliance or they're not in compliance and whether or not to arrest them and the severity of the offense. So that's the support service aspect of what the Firearm Center does. So, you know, still, that's an opinion. Then you have the police officer. He's got an opinion, he or she. They have an opinion on what's going on. Then what happens is, let's say the police officer decides, you know what, I think you've committed an offense. I think it's serious enough. It's a serious enough threat to public safety that I believe I have to arrest you. They arrest you. They take your firearms or ammunition or whatever their situation is. And then they go to the Crown. Now there's a third party in there. And they say to the Crown, hey, you know, we believe that this person has committed an offense under the criminal code of this, this, and this. And we're recommending that you approve charges and take this person all the way to the judge. And so in British Columbia, that's how it works. In different provinces, the police can actually charge you with an offense. In British Columbia, they can't. They can only recommend charges to the Crown, and the Crown decides that. So then it goes to the Crown. The Crown looks at the law, and they're like, well, it looks like you have committed an offense. We're going to try to take you all the way. So off you go to court, and guess who makes the final decision on whether what you did was compliant or was in contravention of the law? It's the judge. Okay. So now that you know what this whole process is, that's really important in understanding how you're going to get, you know, the proper information and how much you can rely on it. I know that was a mouthful, but it's important that you understand that. So let's say I've got a weird, bizarre question. Let's say I've got a question. I live in an RV and I'm in an RV park. 6 months here and 6 months someplace else. My RV is hooked up to power, sewer, and water. And now my question is, because it's a vehicle, is my firearm being stored or is it in transport? And if I'm not hooked up to those utilities and I'm, you know, maybe in the Walmart parking lot because I'm on my way somewhere, you know, and I'm staying overnight there, is it in storage or is it in transport? And because those are different rules. So, you know, when you call the Canadian Firearms Program and you get different opinions, that's because they're just opinions. And you know, these are all people that are talking amongst themselves, trying to give you the best answer possible so that you're not, you know, charged with a criminal offense or not convicted. So here's how it would work with me. Let's say I had some bizarre question like that. What I would do is, number one, I would call the Canadian Firearms Program and I would ask the question and a little bit extra. I'd try to get as many answers as I could and I would record that phone call. You can legally record any phone call in Canada that you are an active participant in and you do not have to tell anybody it's recorded. Now, Mike Loberg is going to jump in and tell me whether I'm right or wrong, but that's my understanding. Remember, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not giving you legal advice. I'm just passing on what I think, what, you know, my knowledge, what, you know, this is my understanding of the law. So, you know, seek separate legal advice. If you got that legal advice plan, go ahead and call them even on what I'm saying. So anyway, how I would do it just personally is I would call the Firearm Center, record that call. Then I would call back again the next day, talk to somebody else and ask them the exact same questions. And I would record that call as well. Now, let me stop there. If you guys want to record calls, it's super easy. Get yourself an app. I have an Android phone. I use this app called ACR. I think it's called Automatic Call Recorder. It's like a little red icon and it's got a little red phone. It's like the phone icon, you know, just the receiver from an old phone right in the middle. Almost looks like a Target kind of thing, red and white. So anyway, that app was like, I don't know, $4 or something like that. It's Smartest thing I ever did, right? Because my phones are automatically, or my phone, my calls are automatically recorded. And then, you know, every few days I'll sit on the couch and I'll go and I'll delete every call that, you know, isn't important, right? Because it does burn up a lot of memory. But anyway, very easy and the quality's awesome. So record those two phone calls. You can upload your phone calls to Google Drive right off the phone, or maybe there's another service for whatever phone, if you got Apple or something, and hang on to them. Just make sure they're safe. So I've got two opinions from the Firearm Center, and then I would call the legal defense or the legal advice line, the $16 a year thing from the CCFR, and I'd say, listen, I've gotten these two opinions from the Canadian Firearms Program to this question. These are the two answers to this question. What my question to you is, in your opinion, do you think that these things are right? And are you able... Here I'm babbling away by myself, right? Losing my thoughts. But are you able to provide me any case law that supports the conclusion that I was given to by the Canadian Firearms Program? Because when it comes to these legal advice lines, they're not experts. They can give you advice on all kinds of stuff, like, you know, I don't know, trespass, defamation, liability. It's, you know, the general concept of law, layers of the law system, you know, the role of the appellate court, the appeals court, stuff like that, right? They're not firearm experts. So you need to tell them exactly what you want from them to get the information that you need. It's not like, tell me what I should do. And they're probably not going to know that. So it's you got to be a little bit more precise in what you ask. Anyway, having said that, I would record that call too and hang on to it. Now, let's say I act on the advice that I've been given there, and I get in trouble with the police. And all of a sudden they're like, yeah, you're in wild contravention with the regulation. What your information we believe is completely wrong. They go to the Crown, they recommend charges. You talk to the Crown, you're like, hey man, I got advice from, you know, here's two phone calls that I recorded. I sat on hold for stinking half an hour getting these answers for 2 days straight to make sure I had it. And then I called a lawyer on top of that. I think I've exercised above and beyond any and all due diligence that would be expected from any private citizen to ensure that I wasn't in contravention of the law. And that is a very valid way to approach this type of situation. So, and that's going to be valid on a bunch of different levels. It'll be valid with the Firearm Center. It's going to be valid with the Crown. And it'll definitely help you in a situation, God forbid, that you're standing in front of the judge. So I know that was a mouthful. I know it's very complex. But if you really want to cover your bases, that's what you should do. Two phone calls that are recorded from the Firearm Center asking the same thing, because it's not unusual. I'm telling you right now, it is not unusual to get different answers from the Firearm Center depending on who you talk to. And don't be shocked. It's the government doesn't do stuff great, but they do the best they can with what they have and the structure they're operating in. I'm not going to defend them, but you have to be your own advocate, not only just for this, but for in many aspects of your life, right? It's not up to them. And they'll tell you, if you call the Firearm Center and you ask them a question and you ask them right after, is this legal advice? They're going to tell you no. It's an opinion of the Firearm Center, and the only one to make a true determination of the law is actually a judge. So knowing that and knowing how the system works, that's how you should navigate it. So make sure that you've shown all due diligence in trying to get the answer to your question, and that you abided by what the advice that you got was. And that is it's a good legal foundation, and Mike can chime in if he hears this and comment, but it's a good legal foundation for a due diligence defense. And I've also heard some people call it a defense based on administrative induced error, I think was what I heard one time. So he can elaborate on that because he's a lawyer. I'm not. And this obviously is not legal advice, but this is how I do it personally. So anyway, hopefully that's helpful. I know it wasn't the best answer. I guess the best answer would be, yeah, you call the Firearm Center and they have the answer to every question. And all you need to do is write it down on a card and just whip it out if you ever get in trouble with the police. That would be the best answer, but it's just not reality. And I don't think it's reality with any aspect of our legal system. That's just not how our system works. So like I said, not a great answer, but that's the answer that we have. Hopefully it helps. And what I would do personally is if I went through that process to have a very exotic question answered, I would share that in a Facebook group. You know, you don't have any legal liability there, but just say, hey, you know what? Here's the weird question I had, and here's the information that I received. Maybe it'll help somebody else, or at least get them halfway to the answer that they're looking for. All right. So that's about it. As I said in the at the outset, thanks very much for Tyler for telling us his story. You know, big news coming from the CCFR in the new year. I know we release big news every every 2 months, but there's still more to come. I know the TV show was awesome, but there's still more to come in the new year quite early. So stay tuned for that. Everybody out there, thank you for your support. If you're a CCFR member, if you're not, join up. Don't wait. We need your help. We need your support. We're doing some really big, really important things for gun owners, things that have never, ever been done or even attempted. And I just find it really exciting. I think we're bringing gun ownership to the mainstream. So thank you for your support. Have a great holiday. I will see you guys back on the CCFR Radio Podcast probably in the beginning of January. So have a Merry Christmas. Enjoy your time off. And thanks again for listening.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.